Stand, please.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-3124, United States of America versus James Dunn, appellant. Ms. Petras for appellant, Ms. Amen for appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mary Petras on behalf of James Dunn. The end result of a Section 3582C2 proceeding is the imposition of a sentence. And Section 3584 provides the district court with the authority, when imposing any sentence, to run that sentence concurrent with or consecutive to any other undischarged term.
That's an open question here, is that correct? Whether or not 3582C2 is, quote, the imposition of a sentence within the meaning of 3284.
Correct.
Yeah.
And our position certainly is that it is, and that the Dylan.
What would it be if it isn't?
I
an adjustment of sentence?
I don't know. You'd have to ask the government that. I think if you're going to.
You represent defendants, and I just wondered if you had run into this.
I have never run into this. Anytime that a person is sentenced, a new sentence is imposed, whether that is a modification from an old sentence, whether that's a resentencing after a remand from this court, or whether it's imposition of a sentence after a revocation of a supervised release, the court issues an order imposing a new sentence.
So would that mean that all the time limits that are normally associated with sentencing would start anew?
All the time limits with regard to?
Here's my example. If 3582C2 is a very limited and narrow proceeding, and the district court is confined to addressing, as the district court did here, only the reduction and nothing else, then could the defendant go back to the district court and file a Rule 35 motion?
Well, I will say that in Phillips, in a slightly different context, the 11th Circuit did hold that when the end result of a 3582 proceeding is a sentencing of a defendant for purposes of Rule 35. So those same provisions do apply to the imposition of a sentence. So the court can only correct it under certain limitations, and those sorts of limitations apply. So, yes, I think that that is correct. The only circuit that has held otherwise is the Sixth Circuit in Harris. And that case is actually contrary to this court's opinion in Berry, which the government filed the 28J letter with regard to a separate issue. But in Berry, this court held that, first of all, in Harris, the Sixth Circuit relied on the language of 1B1.10 in holding that this was not the imposition of, that the consecutive concurrent power did not apply when a sentence was reduced under 3582. And the Sixth Circuit relied on 1B1.10 in holding that it was very limited, and in holding that it applied to the app. 1B1.10 says that all other guideline provisions remain the same. But this court in Berry held that that language refers to the determination of a guideline range pursuant to 1B1.1, sections A through G. And the guidelines themselves provide for a concurrent or consecutive determination pursuant to section H, which follows the determination of the application of the guideline range. So even under the guidelines, this is the appropriate way to proceed, that first you determine whether or not the guideline range has been reduced, and then the court determines whether or not it wants to reduce it based on the amendments to the guidelines, and then the court has its power to impose a new sentence, and when doing so, it has its power under 3584 to impose a consecutive or concurrent.
But now Dylan uses different language. Let me read from Dylan. A district court proceeding under 35A2C2 does not impose a new sentence in the usual sense.
And that's what it says, in the usual sense. And there, another case.
Does it pose it in the unusual sense? I mean, what do you?
No, but it doesn't impose it in the usual sense. And it's not at my fingertips, but I'll get it when I come back up. Another circuit actually addressed that specific language and found that in the usual sense is referring to how it imposes it under 3582. It doesn't mean it's not imposing a sentence. It means that it's imposing it in a limited way pursuant to.
You're saying it's still imposing a new sentence, just not in.
Right.
The standard fact.
Not in the usual sense. And that's how this the other circuit, which I will get it cited in my briefs, has found that language should be interpreted, because it doesn't mean you're not imposing a sentence. And I think that may have been Bowers or Phillips that was addressing whether or not the end result of a 3582 was a sentencing with regard to either appeals or Rule 35. And actually, the facts of this case determine why the Harris's decision was wrong. Because in this case, you wouldn't be holding up in going. The district court wasn't holding that it couldn't change a guideline decision that it already made, because the district court had never made a decision with regard to whether or not Mr. Dunn's sentence should be run consecutive or concurrent, because the new sentence that he was then serving occurred after he was sentenced by the district court. And this actually, not so much the facts of Mr. Dunn's case, but if you extend what the government's arguing, it would demonstrate how wrong this must be, because under the government's theory, a person could get sentenced by a district court and then be serving their sentence and perhaps commit a new offense while they're incarcerated and have a new sentence for that. But at the time of the district court sentence, the district court might have known that that same defendant had a smaller sentence in another matter and held that it should run concurrent. And when he issued the judgment, could say this sentence should run concurrent to any other sentence that the defendant is serving. Then that same defendant goes out and gets a new sentence while he's being incarcerated, and then the guidelines are amended. And when the district court goes to reduce the sentence, the district court, under the government's theory, would be limited in not addressing that initial finding.
Isn't that because, I mean, again, referring to Dillon, hasn't Dillon told us that the only thing 3582C2 extends to is the actual sentence that's being reduced by the sentencing guidelines? You're not supposed to go in and use this as a chance to revisit all the issues in sentencing that may displease you, such as a 3584 determination. Right?
Right, but I'm not asking you to revisit a decision. I'm asking the court to make a decision that was never made before, because this sentence that the second sentence that Mr. Dunn is serving occurred after the initial decision was made. So Judge Sporkin, when he initially sentenced Mr. Dunn, made no decision. And what Dillon really says is you have to follow the guidelines. And there's nothing in the guidelines that takes away the court's 3584 power when you're imposing a new sentence under 3582.
I'll have to think about this, but I read Dillon to be a little, to give us a little less discretion at this point than you're suggesting.
Less our opinion.
I was going to say, I think what you're saying is still not responsive to the question that Judge Griffith is really asking, which is, we have a lot of cases that say the only thing that you can do under 3582 is what the amendment triggers. In other words, that it has to focus on the specific sentence that can be reduced.
But first of all of those cases are very different contexts. And what those cases say is you have to do only what the guidelines say you can do. And I'm not asking for any more than what the guidelines say you can do. Mr. Dunn was eligible for the reduction. The court determined that it was appropriate to give him the reduction. And then the question is, what are the court's authorities when it's imposing that reduction? And nothing about any of those cases limits the court's authority under 3584. Yes, 3582 is a very limited remedy, and it's a very limited statute. But that doesn't mean that you write off all of the other court's powers. And one example I was trying to make that maybe I'm not making very well is, if a district court imposes a sentence and says this sentence should run concurrent to any other sentence, perhaps because the defendant had a small sentence at that time, and then that defendant is serving the sentence and then commits a new sentence, and then the guidelines are reduced for the district court sentence, and the judge wants to reduce the sentence, but the judge wants it to be consecutive to the new sentence, that judge wouldn't have any power to do that because the judge would be imposing the sentence, and the sentence would, all other conditions would have to remain the same, and he already at the initial sentencing made a determination that it should run concurrent with any other sentence. I'm sure the government wouldn't say that the district court at that power doesn't have the authority to say this new sentence, this reduced sentence has to run consecutive to the intervening sentence.
Well, I read but, their...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
But your interpretation seems to me to read the limitation out of 3582. I mean, it becomes not this very limited procedure, which is said over and over. You know, this is a very limited exception to the finality of judgments. And your interpretation means that as soon as there is a reason to reduce a sentence, then everything is now open again.
No, I'm not saying everything is now open. I think the court has already held that everything is not now open. The only thing that is open is if your guidelines are reduced, that the district court can impose a new sentence within that reduced range. That's what the limitations of the statute says. That's because the statute refers to the guidelines, and that's what the guidelines limit the district court to. But the guidelines say nothing about the district court's separate power under 3584 that says the district court, when imposing a sentence, has the authority to impose it concurrent or consecutive. Now, if the guidelines want to say that the district court cannot impose it concurrent to any new sentence, the guidelines could say that, but it doesn't limit it to.
How is that consistent with what this court said in Lafayette?
In Lafayette, Lafayette wasn't entitled to any reduction because Lafayette's, I take that back. Lafayette was entitled to reduction, but the district court found, I'm not going to give you a reduction because he didn't like Mr. I actually represented Mr. Lafayette. He didn't like Mr. Lafayette's attitude and he didn't like Mr. Lafayette's conduct while he was incarcerated. So the district court said, no, yes, I have the authority to reduce your sentence, but no, I'm not going to do it. Mr. Lafayette was trying to argue in his appeal, I didn't represent him on the appeal, but he was arguing that that denial was somehow the new imposition of a sentence. And this court said, no, it's not the new imposition of a sentence, and you can't address all of these issues at this time.
But isn't that exactly what you're arguing now, that it is the new imposition of a sentence?
Because it was the grant of a 3582, not the denial of a 3582. The denial of the 3582 didn't touch the new, didn't touch the old sentence at all. But when a 3582 motion is granted, the district court necessarily has to impose the new reduced sentence. And I think that is consistent with what the Sixth Circuit has said and what the Eleventh Circuit has said with regard to what the court is doing at the time that it grants a motion under 3582.
All right. Why don't we hear from the government? We'll give you a minute. So
thank you.
Rebuttal. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. Christina Amen on behalf of the United States of America. Your Honor, setting aside for a moment the issues that we acquiesced to in the district court about whether any 3582 reduction was available at all, Dillon resolves the question and states that the that there just was no authority on the district court's part, as it found, to make a decision about concurrent versus consecutive.
What now, does Dillon speak to the question of what the district court judge is doing when he grants a 3582C2 motion?
What Dillon speaks to is, yes, and what Dillon essentially says is that what the district court is doing is modifying a sentence. It's not imposing a sentence anew, and it's not engaging in a new guidelines calculus.
In fact, isn't that the name of the section, modification of an imposed sentence?
Absolutely.
Modification of imposed term of imprisonment.
All
absolutely.
Right, but if you're a district court judge and you modify a defendant's sentence, don't you issue a new judgment with an order of sentence?
I'm actually not sure if the courts would have to issue a new J&C or if they would just grant a 3582 motion saying the sentence is modified as follows. I'm just not sure what documents the Bureau of Prisons would need to.
I'm just thinking about, you're sitting there as a district court judge and the clerk's office is trying to figure out what to do and the Bureau of Prisons is trying to figure out what to do. Don't they need an order something saying this man's sentence has been changed?
Yes, they would need an order, Your Honor, but what can precede that order is really what Dillon speaks to.
So if, as appellant is arguing today, he is seeking some relief as a result of having had his 3582C2 motion granted, how can he come before the district court?
Well, he would make a motion for a reduction under Section 3582.
So you agree, or the government agrees, that the time limit under which provision are you talking about?
Oh, you're asking whether, I've misunderstood the question, Your Honor. I believe that he could file under the limited time in Rule 35. That's what Phillips discussed.
So the time under Rule 35 starts anew?
I believe it would start anew, and the reason for that would be that simply, for example, if the court made some sort of arithmetical or clerical error when it was modifying the sentence, it would be rather absurd to say that there'd be no way to correct that simply because there was not a new sentence imposed. I don't think that that the idea that Rule 35 exists in that situation necessarily means that the court has all the authority of imposing a new sentence, as appellant argues. I think the practicalities.
Excuse me, go ahead.
The practicalities of needing some way to correct a mistake that Rule 35 addresses would mean that even in the sense that there was not a new sentence imposed, as we argue, that Rule 35 would apply to at least correct a problem with that within the 14 days that the appellant gets.
So is it the government's position that a defendant who obtains relief under 3582C2, whatever the date of that relief is, the time limit under Rule 35 starts anew, and the defendant can file a motion under Rule 35, and the district court would have authority to consider whether to run the sentences concurrently or not?
I don't think it would have that authority, Your Honor.
That's what I want to know. How does the defendant get back before the district court? Is there any way?
I don't believe that he can get back under the district court, or back to the district court, to challenge those things. He can get back under the provision of Rule 35 to correct clerical mistakes in the sentence.
Well, this isn't clerical.
No.
This never happened, because when he was originally sentenced, there was no other sentence outstanding, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. But
so the district court never made this determination. So is there any way for the defendant to get before the district court again?
No. It would be our position that that there is not any way, because essentially.
So he has to file what? A special writ?
He either has to file a special writ, or really what, when one reads the holding in Dillon and what Dillon means, is that Rule 3582 simply is not a way to allow a defendant to relitigate these issues, or even to litigate them in the first place. What Dillon says is that essentially.
I think we get the government's position on that, and I think we get the Supreme Court on that as far as its holding. What I'm just trying to understand is whether the government's view is that even though a sentence is modified pursuant to 3582C2, and that may have some collateral consequences for the defendant, is there any way for a defendant to come before a district court judge? And you said a special writ. What special writ?
I don't know, Your Honor. It would be my belief that really this defendant particularly has no way of going back to the district court and asking the sentence to run concurrently. He actually probably could have made the time limits on Rule 35 to have requested that in the first place, because the sentencing for his murder case was only 2 days later. And so he could have at that possibly gone back then. But now he's done as far as the government's concerned with that. Because essentially what 3582 allows is for the district court to roll back the clock, take a look at what the guidelines were back then, make the applicable amendment, which in this case would have gone to the base offense level because it was drug quantity related, and then determine whether a reduction was warranted.
I'm just trying to understand the sentencing situation where a defendant is sentenced, and at the time of sentencing, the initial sentencing, the district court judge says on the record, I would never impose this sentence but for the sentencing guidelines. You know, they quadruple your sentence. I would never do this, but I'm required to under the sentencing guidelines. And so he imposes that sentence. Then the commission and Congress make these amendments, and the judge grants the defendant's motion, saying, oh, I'm so happy Congress has done this. This is the sentence I originally would have imposed, and had I imposed it originally, I would have done seven other things as well. So I get your point that the Supreme Court is saying 3582C2 is not the procedural vehicle for any collateral relief. And I just want to be clear if the government's position is that is forever foreclosed, or are there other means that a defendant can get these issues before the district court?
As far as the government's aware, there aren't any. And in fact, the situation that you posit, Your Honor, is exactly what happened in Dillon, because one of the things that Mr. Dillon wanted was to have Booker apply and to allow the district judge to basically go outside the guidelines altogether as a result of Section 3582. And the Supreme Court said no, even though it was the record in Dillon suggested that judge would have sentenced this person to 5 years if he had the authority. And that Dillon also argued that there had been mistakes made in the original guidelines. The Supreme Court was clear that 3582 was not a means by which those things would be corrected, and suggested that Mr. Dillon really didn't have any other option, any other way to get them corrected, which was one of the things that the dissent was very angry about in Dillon, saying that if the...
Has to go to the president for clemency.
He could do that. I mean, nothing would stop him from doing that, Your Honor, but Section 3582 is not the way for him to be able to do such a thing.
So, and 2255, he may not be timely. Habeas doesn't lie because he's being held lawfully.
Well, and in fact, Your Honor, with respect to Mr. Dunn, if we actually look at what the district court could do and what we look at what appellant wanted the district court to do, it's a be careful what you wish for situation, because if the district court actually went back and considered everything anew rather than doing what it did, which was looking at the old guidelines, then Mr. Dunn would have had higher criminal history score.
Yes, but that's always the risk the defendant takes.
But that criminal history,
their sentences and things like that.
But that criminal history score is directly related to his request, because that's the sentence that he wants to
make. He's represented by very knowledgeable counsel, very able counsel, and it is a risk defendants take, but they make these judgments.
Well, it's true, Your Honor, but in this case, he's being protected from himself because the judge is not applying the extra criminal history score and is not making a new decision. And in fact, if the appellant here were so concerned about having this be a concurrent sentence, he could have asked the district court to wait to sentence him in the first instance until the Superior Court was done. But of course, he didn't do that, because then the Superior Court's conviction would have been final and those points would have been added.
Did he ask the Superior Court for a concurrent sentence?
I am not certain, Your Honor. I don't know what he asked for in the Superior Court.
Ms. Ahmed, I want to ask you about a different aspect of the case, which you don't argue here, but there's at least an argument that a defendant must be currently serving the sentence that triggers the amendment. The government made that argument rather belatedly. Have you decided that you waived that question?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. It would be our position that the appellant here is not still serving his federal sentence. And even if he were deemed to be still serving it, the policy statement that says that in no event will his sentence be less than the time he's already served would bar him even from getting the 1 month reduction. I realize that the government acquiesced on both of those points in the district court, but we would still maintain under Barry that this court has the authority if it believes that that was that the district court doesn't have authority to do it. This court does have the authority itself to say so.
So what's your theory here?
Well, first of all, Your Honor,
the government said to the district court, we acquiesce.
Yes.
And now the government's saying we take that back.
Essentially, Your Honor. Essentially,
I'm just trying to understand, fair play or not. Should those arguments have all been presented to the district court?
They should have been, Your Honor. The district court was well aware of what the statutes were. In fact, they're quoted in the government's pleadings in the district.
Very knowledgeable district court judge.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And the government acquiesced.
Yes, and I'm not certain why the government acquiesced. I believe it was a situation where there were myriad of these motions.
We're not going to speculate. It acquiesced on the record.
Yes, Your Honor, it did.
All right, knowledgeable counsel for the government.
Yes, Your Honor. It would nevertheless be our position that if this court chooses to rule on those grounds, that the appellant here has clearly discharged his sentence and that he has served 18 years, which is well more than anything that the district court could have given him with a sentencing modification. So truly, the court didn't have authority to do anything for him.
Does your argument that it was jurisdictional here and that even though the government may have acquiesced, it's still a jurisdictional issue that we should look at? Is that your point? Or
I don't think it's jurisdictional.
You're just trying to walk away from what the government did below. Understandably so.
At least stroll away, Your Honor.
Stroll away.
What?
Okay.
She said at least stroll away.
Stroll away?
Yes.
But you're not taking the position it was jurisdictional?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
Anything further?
If there are no further questions, we would ask that the district court's order be affirmed.
Thank you very much.
First of all, on the last issue, our position is that Mr. Dunn certainly is still serving the sentence. It's a factual issue that wasn't raised below. It was affirmatively waived below.
Serving the sentence for the cocaine possession?
Yes, he's serving an aggregate sentence, including this sentence for the district court. And
let's be clear about that. This aggregate is an administrative tool by the Bureau of Prisons. I mean, on the federal district court records, has he served his federal district court sentence?
No.
And that's because?
That's because they're aggregated under the statute, and because they're aggregated, he hasn't been released.
Let me ask
he's
you,
still
how
serving
how long was his sentence for cocaine possession?
How long was his sentence for, in this case?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was thinking of it. I think it was 151 months.
And when did it start? When did he start serving that sentence?
And it was done January 1st, 2000.
Now, see, it wasn't done.
Serving that sentence?
He started serving that sentence more than 121 months ago, but it was aggravated with a Superior Court sentence. And I will say this.
Yeah, we don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means. He started on day one. 121 months later, he had served his sentence.
No.
The guidelines change afterwards.
No. Under the statute.
This isn't metaphysical.
Which statute are we talking about here?
3584C. Multiple sentences are treated as a single aggregate sentence. So it's treated as a single aggregate sentence. I will say part of the reason the government waived this and didn't raise it below is because they lost it before another district court judge.
When will he stop serving the sentence for cocaine possession? On what date?
He will stop when he's released on both the aggregate terms. That's when his term will stop and his supervised release term will start. And I would point the court to the Supreme Court's decision in Garlett, which held that in the same circumstances, for purposes of a habeas petition, the defendant was still held under habeas and still had his right to habeas.
Corollary consequences to that, right? Didn't that have to do with probation and things of that nature?
But well, the question was whether or not he was still detained in Garland. It was still whether or not he was detained on that case, and the answer was yes. And this situation is the same. But really, I shouldn't be in a position of making the factual argument that he's still there and when, what time something started and what time it stopped and what's the meaning of that date that the government says.
He's there for the murder now.
Right? He's there because of both sentences now. If he only had the murder, he wouldn't be there now either.
So I understand, is part of this the argument that while it's a superior court sentence, it's a U.S. prosecution, and therefore 3584C encompasses the superior court sentence?
3584C.
I mean, suppose he had been sentenced in Maryland by a state court. Then, for the murder, would that would C still apply, 3584C?
If he was designated to the Bureau of Prisons to serve the Maryland case. But if
right,
he
I understand
either,
that, but that's what I'm trying to understand here, why the Superior Court sentence is being treated as an aggregate under 3584C.
Because he's serving them both. He's been federally designated in the Superior Court case.
Okay, I hear you. Do we have any cases on this?
I don't have any cases on that, and I don't have the paperwork to show he's been federally designated because it wasn't raised below, so I can't factually show the court, and I simply shouldn't be in the position of making factual arguments.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I was just trying to get some information. Let me find out if my colleagues have any questions.
Could I just address one thing that yes. Judge Griffith said earlier with regard to Dillon and its and cases under 3582 not being imposed in the usual sense. It was the Bowers case that indicated that in the usual sense just distinguishes it from a total resentencing, but it doesn't mean that it's not the imposition of a sentence. And that's what the court held in Bowers. And I would also point out that in Dillon, it refers to in several other places the end result of a Section 3582 proceeding being a sentence being imposed. And the only last thing I'd ask to be able to say is that, yes, 3582 is limited, and there's all this authority out there for the fact that it's limited, but it's not a sweeping, it's limited so we can only do this. It's limited by what the statute says, and it's limited by what the guideline says, but neither the statutes nor the guideline take away the court's authority under 3584.
Thank you very much. We will take the case under advisement.